All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and get started. We may have some folks showing up a little bit later, but we'll just let them show up. So we have a lot to cover this evening. My name is Jason Ledbetter. For those of you that haven't met me, I'm the new town manager. We expect that we should be running until about 9 o'clock this evening. We have a lot of information to go through as this is the first of four CAC meetings, so we have a lot of slides to present to you. Just covering some basic information. The longer microphones, when they're red, they're considered turned on. And so the shorter microphones, when they're green, they're also considered turned on. So everybody should be in a turned on position for their microphone. But if we can just jump right into the slideshow, Julie, to the first slide. So first and foremost, we're just going to review this evening's agenda so everybody has a decent understanding of exactly everything we're trying to get through. So we'll go around the room and we'll have introductions to each CAC member and the staff and the project team. We will then have a plan update and overview and town attorney primer. So we'll go over background information, the Brown Act, and some ethics information. We will have two different public comment opportunities this evening, one at the beginning of the meeting and one near the end. We're asking everybody for a maximum of 3 minutes when they give their public comment. We'll then take a break. During this time, throughout the entire meeting, there is food over on the table over here to my right and also beverages. Feel free at any point. You don't need to wait till the break to get up and grab some snacks if you like, or some beverages, or you can wait until the break. We'll then go over the existing conditions analysis. That's really the backbone of tonight's meeting. Then we'll have a very broad discussion with the Community Advisory Committee. Talking specifically about the issues, constraints, and opportunities for the Town Center Area Plan update. And then finally, we'll have our final public comment for the evening where we again reiterate that, this could be a long meeting and we'd like to keep things at 3 minutes per public speaker. Next slide, please. So just to go over tonight's objectives, there are some more simple objectives, such as the first one is just very easily to kick off the very first meeting for the TCAP CAC advisory. And that's what we're going to do by just physically showing up tonight. Secondly, we're going to provide an overview of the area plan update and associated community engagement. So, to give you kind of the understanding of what we're doing and how we're going to proceed forward through this process. And then finally, we're going to hear and collect key themes from the advisory committee. With respect to very specific issues, constraints, and opportunities in the town center, the town center itself, one of the general constraints that I always kind of talk about or opportunities would be pedestrian access. But there's a number of different opportunities that a Good City will go over this evening. And then finally, before I kick it off to Good City to pick up the rest of this slideshow, I just kind of wanted to talk about those that kind of came before us ultimately, that Woodside is an extremely magical place. It's a huge privilege to be the town manager in Woodside. It's a privilege to be on the staff. It's a privilege to live in Woodside, quite frankly. And I think everybody chooses to live in Woodside for very specific and personal reasons. But ultimately, this town was incorporated in 1956, and it didn't just happen to turn out like this. Folks that lived here before you, and folks that worked here before me got together and had a vision and a plan on why things look the way they do in Woodside. And I think we need to recognize that that's what we are about to embark on. We are taking control of our town, and this is truly a public-led engagement that ultimately we have a huge opportunity that the public can really lead the staff on the town that they want to live in moving forward. So I just want everybody to consider that as we work together tonight. And I'm going to kick it over to Good City. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jason, and good evening, everyone. My name is Aaron Ackman. I am a principal with Good City Company. We are a firm based in downtown Redwood City, so it's nice to work pretty locally. It only took me about 10, 12 minutes to get here, which is great. We work throughout the Bay Area. I think we've worked in about 40 cities over the past 3 years, so It's wonderful to be right here in our own backyard. We specialize in advanced planning, so policy planning documents like this. We also do a lot of current planning. So whenever we, which means that we're doing kind of the day-to-day work inside city halls. So we always try to construct these policy planning documents so you could actually implement them, with that the plan is really what you're planning to do. So we always do that with in mind. And you can see some of the other stuff that we work on too, everything from economic development to housing to city managers' office services. Next slide. So best practices for CAC meetings. A lot of these you will know right off the bat. I would say what's unique about the CAC, and I think the town manager put it well, is that the city council, the town council really wanted the CAC to help shape the overall vision. And there's 18 people on this, which is on the large end of these CACs. Usually you see it in the 12 to 14 range. So I think it's a lot of these points here, I think, are particularly important that, you know, that one person speaks at a time, try to stay on topic. We have 3 hours, which might seem like a lot of time, but it's really not when we have a lot of things to discuss. So make sure to share airtime with other people that are sitting here. We want to hear from everyone. Of course, critique ideas. We want to see critique the ideas that we bring forward, the observations that we want to see. But as other people say things, make sure to say, I disagree with the idea, but not the person who's making that comment. And of course, seek to understand different perspectives, and hopefully other people will understand your perspectives as well. Next slide. So at this point, I will turn it over to Troy, who is the project manager for this engagement.
Great. Thank you, Jason and Aaron. Oops, excuse me. I think some of you I've met before, either at the town council meeting or through our various stakeholder meetings, but for those who haven't, pleasure to meet you all tonight. And to kick this off, we'd love to do a round of introductions, starting with staff, then our team, and then we'll hand it off to the folks here. And what we'd like for each of you is to give kind of a brief introduction and tell us a little bit about yourself. Try to stick to no more than, you know, 30, 60 seconds, but give us a little background about why you wanted to be a part of this committee. I think that'll help shape your role and your involvement in this committee for us to understand why it's important to you to be on this body. So I'll go ahead and I think we all heard from Jason already, but I'll hand it back to staff. Maybe we start with Sage and then Jean and Julie.
Hello, excuse me. Hello, my name is Sage Sean. The planning director for the town of Woodside. I've been in Woodside for 17 years, planning director for about the last 2.5 years.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Jean Savory. I'm the town attorney.
And I'm Julie Paping, the deputy town clerk. You will see lots of emails from me.
Great. Thanks, folks. So again, you already met Aaron, and you may have met me. I'm going to be the project manager managing the day-to-day of this project. So you can feel free to email me about your ideas and your thoughts. I'll be the conduit for a lot of this work. And I also want to introduce other members of our consultant team. I'll hand it off to Kevin.
Thank you, Troy. My name is Kevin Gardiner, and I oversee the long-range planning projects for Good City Company. You'll see a lot of me in the second half of this meeting. I'll be helping to facilitate the discussion, ensuring that everybody has a chance to participate, and look forward to hearing everybody's ideas. With that, I would like to introduce our other consultants on our team, Urban Field Studio. They're really the design folks on our team, and we'll start with Jane Lynn.
Hey, everyone. My name is Jane Lynn. I'm an architect and urban designer and part of Urban Field Studio, and we're supporting in all the pieces that have to do with the physical realm. We are experts in streetscape design and also public realm plazas and things like that. And here I'll pass it to Ryan.
Hello, my name is Ryan Call. I'm also with Urban Field, and my background is architecture, and I have a lot of experience in commercial, retail, and office. Here to support.
Great, thanks. All right, well, let's go ahead and start and kind of just go clockwise around here. So maybe we can start with Sue.
Hello, my name is Sue Sweeney. I've lived in Woodside over 30 years. It says it's on. Oh, okay. Sorry. My name is Sue Sweeney. I've lived in Woodside for over 30 years. I live in Woodside Hills. I am the current chair of the Environment and Open Space Committee, and I've been on the committee for over 10 years. And obviously, I care about wildlife and open space in Woodside.
Hi, I'm Sue Paletti. I've lived in Woodside for 36 years. I live on Raimondo, and I own three properties in Woodside, and I love Woodside. I plan on living here the rest of my life, so I'm interested in what happens to our town. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve Patrick. I'm an architect in town. I've lived here 68 years, so I've seen a lot of changes, and I love this town. That's why I'm part of this committee. I was on the committee in 2013, where it got fairly far along, and I guess it kind of got dropped. So now this is kind of the next iteration of what could potentially form the new town center, or revised town center.
I'm Steve Lubin. Can you hear me? Okay. I grew up on La Cuesta Way and walked to Woodside School when there was a crossing guard at Caldwell's, now Robert Store, and a wide gravel path along the road to the school. The lady later studied art and architecture and gained a deep appreciation of good design of public spaces, and I continue studying developments in urban design. I've participated in town center development since the 1970s as a member of the Planning Commission, ASRB, Trails and Bicycle Committees, as well as two previous, including the one Steve was on, town center committees. This included Planning Commission review of Gilbert Center and Kenyatta Corners expansion when the hardware store and salon wings were added. And I recruited and worked with the architects EHDD in the design of the Woodside School Library and Woodside Town Hall and the relocation of Independence Hall, where we are now, and the associated parking district, and was instrumental in the design of the parking lot, strangely. Thalia and I were the architects of the restoration of the Matheson Farmhouse into the Woodside Community Museum.
I'm Richard Erstead. My family owns two parcels in Town Center, one purchased in 1977, the other in 1989. It was part of the public hearings for the Parking Assessment District, representing both parcels. I took part in many public hearings during that time frame, then appointed to the ad hoc committee in 1999 that studied the town center itself and its potential expansion of parking, and then sat on the same committee that Steve sat on in 2013, 2014 that re-studied the town center.
Hi, I'm Pat Delgavio, and I have a business and live in town and love Woodside and look forward to seeing how we could affect some changes but still keep the charm of the community as it is that we all love so much. And been in town for over 30 years as well.
Oh, yeah. Hey, folks. Matt Garr, Vice Chair on Planning Commission. Not for probably about 3 years. Circulation Commission, or Circulation Committee, excuse me, before that. So interested in, you know, all those sort of circulation and planning aspects. Why am I on this? Well, a couple of things. So first, I also just moved in the last week or two. So I'm actually on Raimundo, so we're neighbors. And in Planning Commission, we were faced with a very, very overly constrained and suboptimal. I think, you know, Lyle and I sat here and listened to a ton of feedback, and we, you know, ultimately endorsed the housing element. But I made a, you know, number of on-record comments about how bad the outcome was. And the reason was because we had an overly constrained problem, right? And so, like, I'm all for upholding the general plan, but we don't live in a vacuum. So unless, you know, Sacramento completely turns over and the movements change, I don't want, if I'm still on Planning Commission in 6 years, to be making such bad decisions again. Or if I'm not, I don't want those who are sitting in the seat to be making such decisions and be faced with that. So I'm hopeful that through the town center plan, we can also find ways that, like, globally optimized instead of locally optimized. Because we were living the results of some decisions that were made with good intentions at the time, but that, like, led to a really bad outcome.
My name is Lyle Weaver. I'm currently chair of the Planning Commission. My professional background is in engineering. My family and I have been Woodside residents for the last 23 years, and I've been a user of the town center for 41 years. And looking forward to this opportunity to form a consensus to move the town center into the, to keep it vibrant into the 21st century.
Hi, I'm Julie Sakara, and I guess I'm a newbie in town. I've been here a decade now, and my husband Neil and our three kids and I have two properties close to town, and we are deeply invested in the town. My husband's firm, Defy, was on Woodside Road up until a few months ago. I served as the president of the foundation at the school, and Neil was on the school board. We have a lot of involvement. We have a lot of friends. We love, as Jason said, the magic of this town. And I'm here, hopefully, to be able to represent all of the people who've been giving me their thoughts and help us to move forward while making sure that we do retain all of the wonderful things that we all love about this town.
Hello, I'm Don Lindsay. Relative newcomer to Woodside, having only just acquired a property here 5 years ago, Woodside Hills. For the last 3 years, I've served on the ASRB, currently acting as chair. And in many ways, I see participation in this as an extension of the ASRB role, just broadening it and to look at the future of what we believe will serve as a better town center for us.
My name is Dan Drucker. I was asked to represent District 3 on the committee. I've lived in the area for a little over 50 years. I'm a retired tech exec with five kids and three dogs, and that's a big part of my life. I serve on the circulation committee. I also run one of the three large homeowners associations east of 280. And I care a ton about community. And that's really why I'm here, is helping bring Woodside together into a really amazing community and make it even better than already is.
My name's Christine Roberts. My family owns the market and Kenyatta Corners. So we're obviously a big part of the town center. And George came here in 1960, so we've been here a long time. And I don't think we were involved in any of the other town center meetings, I don't know, in 2013 or whenever. So I'm honored to be asked to be a part of it this time. I'm looking forward to seeing the ideas and, of course, retaining the rural part of this town. But also the vibrancy, with the restaurants and the dining and the shopping. So hopefully we can maintain that and add to that in the right way.
My name is Caroline New, and I was born and raised in Woodside over 41 years ago. I am in District 4, which is up the hill close to Alice's restaurant. I left Woodside to go to college at the University of Pennsylvania and was an architecture history major. I returned to the area last summer, and we are once again living up the hill. My two young children and husband, I work at Castilea School in Palo Alto and formerly was at the Philadelphia Museum of Art for 15 years. Both of these employers have gone through extensive expansions and renovations and capital projects, so I've been familiar tangentially with some of these planning processes. I'm really grateful to be on the committee.
My name is Carly Rivera. My parents bought their home in Woodside over 50 years ago. I've lived here my whole life. I now work at Woodside Elementary School. And like it's been said, I'm here because I care about the community, and I get a lot of opinions from a lot of families. So so I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Barry Cool. I have lived in Woodside just over 20 years. I have been on Trails Committee. Going on 9 or 10 years, I was chair of it the last 3 years. I just love Woodside. since retiring from the tech community, I wanted to find a way to give back. And being on volunteer committees and doing volunteer things has given me that opportunity. And I've enjoyed Woodside even more with having so much time to not work. And I'm just really anxious to hear opinions from everybody else on this committee, community members. Woodside is a special place, unique, I think, in the Bay Area. I think we'd all agree with that, and we want to keep it that way. And I'm anxious to hear ways that we can make it even more special.
Great. Thank you so much all for sharing. It's really a pleasure to hear why you're here. I think that gives a lot of color to what you're going to bring to this conversation. So just a quick reminder, please try to speak into the mics. I know the mics are a little wonky, but it helps the public here. And then for those of us who are on Zoom, it helps as well. So I think we'll note for the record that Leanne and Vanessa Johnson are not here. And then I believe Ersan will be late. So I think that accounts for a roll call. And at the beginning of each of these meetings, we'll do a roll call for the future. So with that, I'll go ahead and give a brief overview of this process and the expectations for this committee, and then broadly what the planned community engagement is that's going to accompany this committee's involvement in the effort. If you saw the first town council meeting, you'll recognize some of these slides. It's a very similar presentation that I gave to the council members, but I thought it would be important for everyone here to kind of understand the broad thrust of this process, and also to give the town attorney an opportunity to speak a little to some of the more legal and ethical considerations. So you'll see here kind of an organizational chart for this process. At the top, naturally, are the council and the planning commission, since those are the decision-making bodies. You guys fit in right there on the left. You're a really key voice and input into the decision-making process, as well as the rest of the town residents and stakeholders. Below the council is, of course, the staff, who will be helping us integrally across this whole process. We sit right there below the staff, supporting the staff, leading the team of technical experts. As Aaron mentioned, we're really focused on the policy and the land use side, although, of course, we'll be leading up engagement as well. You met Jane and Ryan from Urban Field Studio. They'll be giving the presentation in the second half of tonight's meeting, since they focus more on the kind of the built environment and the urban design aspects. We also have a transportation expert on our team, Alta. We have EPS, who will be leading the market and the kind of commercial trends piece. And then we have a CEQA firm who will be doing the EIR component, David J. Powers. So as we look to update the plan, I think it behooves us to kind of refresh our memory about the current plan and what the kind of the key aspects are of that plan were. It was, as some of you may know, adopted in 1970, was amended in 88 through the ballot measure J. It sits within the city's general plan, so it's effectively a chapter of that general plan, and kind of a subsection to the general plan. And it is a policy document that really is meant to guide change and development or other improvements in the town center over time. Next slide. So again, just to reiterate, there are a couple of pieces here. You start with the general plan, which is really the overall primary document that guides everything that happens in the city. Each general plan is updated approximately every 20 years, sometimes more or less frequently below the general plan. And again, an element of that general plan is the housing element, which Matt referenced, which you as a town recently went through the update to the housing element. And so this effort really springs from that update to the housing element. It's a program within the housing element that asked us as a group and as a community to look at an update to the area plan, in part to determine whether housing is appropriate in the town center, and if so, what kind of housing would be appropriate. But the town is taking this opportunity to update the plan to look more broadly across a lot of areas, not just housing, of course, transportation, parking, environmental constraints, building design, streetscape. So this will be a comprehensive update. Next slide. So just a quick overview of this process. We initiated this work earlier this year. We had our first town council meeting. We formed this committee. This is the start of really the second phase, which is a visioning phase where we want to hear from this group and from members of the community about what's important to them in the town center, the ways that we can enhance the town center, the ways we want to preserve or, you know, maintain aspects of the town center. So this phase two is really important, is really going to set the stage for the plan update. So we'll be in this visioning phase throughout the end of this year, potentially into the early next year, most likely. We'll then move after we kind of settle on the confines or contours of a vision. We'll then move into a plan update itself, accompanied by the CEQA review and the EIR update. And then finally, this plan and the accompanying EIR will be adopted by this town council at the end of this process. So just to kind of shape up what we want to get out of this process, we have a couple of key objectives here. The first, and this group is a key part of this, is really engagement. So it's engagement with members of the community, especially those who own properties and run businesses in this community, try to understand the long-term plans of those owners and those stakeholders. How can we work with them to achieve those plans and those visions? We're going to offer, and I'll speak to this in a moment, the community broadly with other ways to get involved in this process and to share their voice with us, such as a survey, pop-ups, other workshops. As some of the folks here mentioned, what we really want to do is try and build a consensus around a shared vision for the town center so that we all feel like we can have a ownership over this town center plan. And as you know, as we've discussed, I think it's really important that this plan really respects the local concerns at the top over those of, you know, those who come to visit the town. One of the key issues that we've heard over and over again as part of our early engagement with stakeholders and with walking through this area is just how important it is to seek to improve circulation and parking. That's the issue that really rose to the front of all of our conversations. So we'll be talking about it tonight, and then we'll be talking about it in future meetings. Improving the safety of the movement through and around the town center for vehicles, pedestrians, bicycles, and equestrians, trying to balance all those modes in a fair way. And then sort of harkening back to the housing element push is determining the appropriate land use mix for this, for the town center, seeking to understand the demand for different types of commercial uses, understanding the feasibility and the interest in certain housing types while keeping in mind, you know, Measure J limitations, seeking to develop a plan that is, you know, market viable from a commercial standpoint, seeking to add community gathering and civic places, which, you know, we currently do not have enough of in the town center. And then as many of you really articulated, it's really important for us to balance the improvements and the change and the new ideas with what really makes Woodside special, which is this rural character and special feel. All right, so now we'll briefly review the boundary of this plan area. You see the plan area there outlined in the green and the orange. The original plan area was in the orange from the 1970 plan. Encompasses where we're sitting today, over to the Roberts Market, the Kenyatta Corners, and then over to the Chevron and the open space on the other side. It's basically all properties fronting onto Woodside Road. And then as a result of the council sort of discussion and early meetings, we added the property on the backside of Kenyatta Quarters and also the rights of way along Woodside Road, stretching on the west side to Little Store, and then on the east side down to the 280 on-ramp. So looking at primarily the land use and the buildings inside the town center, but then stretching out really the mobility piece on both sides to encompass kind of folks moving in and out of the town center. So that's our plan boundary. So now I'll review some of the engagement that we're proposing as part of this process. And just to, again, sort of reiterate some of the goals we want to achieve here is to really encourage a broad participation of the community. We want to make sure that it's a collaborative process. We want to be transparent with everyone here. We want to prioritize the local values, and we were seeking to deliver a comprehensive vision that people are all on board with. So here are the activities that we've planned. We've already been doing some stakeholder interviews with, you know, key owners and key folks here. We'll continue to do those as are appropriate going forward. We've got four pop-ups planned. Those are kind of informal table events where we'll be sitting outside of a business or at the Day of the Horse with a table, and we'll have information and we'll have folks there who will, you know, be looking to engage in conversation with folks who are passing by, gathering their ideas and driving more people towards some of our other engagement opportunities like the survey. So we'll put up a link to this shortly, but we've already launched our first online survey, which we encourage everyone here to take if you haven't already, and then please share it with all the folks that you're hearing from who are interested in this process. Where our first survey is really focused on kind of tonight's conversation, which is issues and opportunities and experience of the town center. And then our second survey will be more focused on the vision and the proposed improvements. And I skipped over the community workshops. So each of the two main phases of this project will be focused around a workshop. The first one, again, around more of the issues and opportunities, and the second workshop focused around the vision. Those will be larger, more formal activities, likely taking place at the elementary school, so we can accommodate a larger audience. We'll have informational materials, presentations, et cetera. So those will be kind of signature events. We'll also have some videos that will be posted on the project website that will explain some of the materials I'm presenting tonight and also some of the existing conditions information so that everyone can kind of be up to speed on what we're learning and what we're planning to do. We already had the first of four planned town council meetings where we'll be presenting information and receiving direction from the council members at key milestones of this project. And then, of course, four meetings with this body where we'll be seeking to gather themes and key input from folks here. So this is a bit of a complicated diagram, but it's just an expansion of the first timeline, which, again, there's kind of the initiation followed by visioning, followed by the plan development, and then review and adoption. I just wanted to highlight the four meetings with the CAC. You see them there encircled in kind of the brown rectangles. First meeting tonight is really at the start of the visioning process. The next meeting will be as we are sort of in the throes of developing that vision. And then the third one will be as we're kind of bringing to a close the visioning process, seeking to kind of come to consensus around a vision that we'll then carry forward to the council meeting. As I mentioned, that first phase of engagement will include a survey, two pop-ups, a workshop. Then there'll be a second phase of engagement again with a survey, pop-ups, and a workshop. This first visioning phase will then conclude kind of with a keystone meeting with the Planning Commission and the council. We'll then move into plan review, plan development and environmental review document preparation. The fourth CAC meeting will be essentially a preview of the plan document before it goes out to the public to kind of vet the ideas there and to make sure that we're all kind of aligned with the vision of that plan. Then we'll conclude with public review of CEQA and a town council study session towards the end of this process. So why have we convened you all here? We really want to make sure that, you know, we use your time in a valuable way. So to articulate what we want from you is that this body is really a sounding board for the ideas that our team is going to be generating throughout this process. We're looking for you all to give us your opinions and advice on which ideas we should put into the plan. So we'll be looking for your feedback, your input on key topics, as far as land use, parking, transportation, et cetera, and also to help us shape the community engagement in a way that it's most successful. So ultimately, this body will be looking for you all to make recommendations, and then, of course, the council will be the final sort of decision-making authority. So what do we expect out of the members here? We're asking for you to attend all four of the scheduled meetings. If you cannot, please notify Julie. As we articulated, we really think it's important that you follow the ground rules and the best practice so that we can have a really respectful, productive exchange of ideas. We ask that you review the materials we sent in advance. This time we sent this presentation and the existing conditions presentation, which several of you had thoughts and comments on, so we appreciate that review. Since a lot of you are already on local boards and commissions, we look for you to serve as a liaison to the ASRB, to the Planning Commission, et cetera. That really is a way for us to amplify the engagement that we're doing here and for you to gather more perspectives and input to bring into this process. And then, of course, what I think all of you will naturally be doing is talking with your neighbors, your friends, other, you know, schoolmates and folks to really hear their ideas and to bring those ideas to the table. All right, with that, I'll turn it over to Jean to give a brief primer.
Thank you, Troy. So I will be brief, I promise. Conflict of interest. Elected and appointed officials in the state of California are governed by the Political Reform Act. And one of the provisions in the Political Reform Act says that if you are asked to consider a project which involves your own property or you are within 500 feet of the property that's being discussed, you need to recognize that as a conflict of interest and recuse, meaning you don't participate. So during the appointment process for the CAC, the question was raised, well, if property owners are placed on the CAC, do they need to recuse and not discuss certain aspects of the town center area plan? The answer to that is no. The FPPC, which is the enforcement provision, division that governs in this area, has issued two advice letters you can rely on. And they indicate that because you are only making recommendations to the council, you do not have a conflict of interest. You do not need to recuse in any way, even if you own property within the town center. Second, Brown Act. The Brown Act is another provision in the California Government Code that says that meetings of this sort need to be agendized, and the public needs to have an opportunity to participate, and that you should be participating here in this open session. It prohibits trying to form consensus with other members of the CAC outside of these meetings. If happening and somebody is contacting, and I know this would be a big lift for a group this big, if you are communicating with a majority of the members and trying to form consensus on something outside the public meeting, that is prohibited. So the bottom line of the Brown Act is that your conversations and your thinking should happen here, not outside public meetings. I was going to talk about ethics, but I think Aaron really addressed that in slide number 6 for you. The town does have a code of ethics which applies to you, and Aaron has used different words but pretty succinctly described what that says, which is to be courteous, respectful, open-minded in your participation on the CAC. So thank you.
Question, Jean, on that? With Brown Act, it is majority, or what are the specific stipulations on that as far as quantities, et cetera?
What the Brown Act prohibits is trying to form consensus by contacting a majority of the CAC. Now, you can have conversations with other members of the CAC if you want to discuss ideas outside of a public meeting, but what the Brown Act is trying to prohibit is a majority building an idea and getting outside of the public meeting consensus on a particular matter.
Some of the material that you handed out said not to talk to the press. Could you talk a little about that?
Yeah, sure. I think that's what we're looking for is, again, the conversations to really happen in here and for there to be an opportunity for this group to express ideas here and for us to kind of convey those ideas, even if there's, you know, differing ideas or conflicting ideas, for us to convey those ideas to the council rather than for individual members to kind of speak to the press, potentially portraying their opinions as representing the CAC in a way that is sort of not appropriate. So I think that's just something that we've learned from past groups like this, is that it usually only gets us in trouble when someone goes and kind of gives an opinion to the press that may appear to be speaking on behalf of the body. So I think it's our recommendation that we kind of, again, have those conversations here and we convey that to the decision makers rather than through the press. All right. So again, let me just touch on some of the engagement we've got planned. As I mentioned, our survey is now live. You can access it through the QR code here. It's also on the project website. It's also in the email blast that the town clerk recently sent out. We've got two pop-ups that we've tentatively scheduled for September 13th at the Village Hub, and then in front of Emily Joubert on September 25th. We've also are working towards the first workshop at Woodside Elementary in the gym on the evening of October 9th. And again, this information will be disseminated via email blast and posted on the project website. So with that, I think some of you already jumped ahead on questions for the town attorney, but right now we'll go ahead and pause. If there are any further questions for Jean, you can pipe up now, or if you have feedback or questions about this presentation, about the project, or about, in particular, about kind of some of our early engagement. Yep.
Are there expectations with regard to CAC members attending and participating in these community meetings?
I would love for you guys to come. It's not a requirement, but the more you participate, the more we get to hear from you. We would love it if you can't come to go ahead and, you know, share it with your friends and your neighbors. Go ahead and drive as many people to these events as you can. I think it's most important that you come to these meetings, but we would love for you to stop by and say hi to us at a pop-up. Failing that, do please, you know, invite your sister, your mother, your friends, your neighbors. So.
One more question. So this is probably half legal, half planning, which is the statement was made on making recommendations kind of pursuant to Measure J and all of the citizen initiatives. And is that required of the scoping? And part of the reason I ask that is we would probably get to different scenarios with and without certain restrictions that were put in place. And I think it would be interesting to understand, knowing that things like Measure A have actually changed the overall scenario, whether those can be considered as well.
Yeah, I think you're asking, should we feel constrained at this point to discuss implications for those measures? I think, and Jean, you can comment on this too, but I think at this time we should feel open in our discussion. And if we get to a point where there's consensus to pursue something more concrete, we can have the staff kind of report back on the implications or the optionality in those regards. But I think as a starting point, I think we should feel more open to kind of talk through different opportunities, and then we can kind of circle back on what the implications might be.
I agree.
I had a question. In terms of providing feedback either to the city or the town, it sounds as if these four meetings are the forum for a lot of that conversation. But outside of these meetings, based on what you said about the Brown Act, it sounds like we probably should not be expressing the opinions like sending an email to the entire committee, but rather funnel them through the appropriate channels. Can you talk a little bit about that and provide instructions for us?
Yes, if you have something that you'd like to have distributed, it should go to staff. And that way it will become part of the public packet, and the public will have an opportunity to see that as well. But you should also feel free to have conversations with others. I mean, part of the slides indicated you're seeking that information, and bringing it here to the meetings is an important part of what you're asked to do as a CAC member.
All right, seeing no further questions, I think we'll now turn it over to public comment.
Thalia Lubin, History Committee. I just have one comment, and that's in the cultural section of your report. You say there are no buildings in Town Center that are on the register. This building we're in is on the National Register. And there are some other buildings in town that have qualified for a preservation award from the History Committee. One is Roberts Market and the other is the Firehouse Bistro. And there are several others. The museum was built in 1906. The general store across the street was built in 1907. So I have some walking brochures that the committee put together. I don't have enough for everybody, but I'll spread these out. And I do encourage you to pick them up over at the museum. We're currently closed, preparing for a new exhibit about the fire district. So anyway, if you could make that correction, and if those buildings could be somehow looked at in the whole planning process, we would like them preserved. And maybe there's some adaptive reuse we could make. For instance, the Pioneer could look at housing, stuff like that. Thank you.
Absolutely. We apologize for the mistake and appreciate the correction. And naturally, some of this historic and cultural resources will be a key focus of CEQA review as is required.
We do have a handful of folks attending online. So for those online, if you'd like to make a comment, please use the raise hand feature. There are no raised hands online.
All right, then we'll take a brief, maybe only 5-minute break. Folks want to grab a bite, and then we'll reconvene for our content discussion around issues and opportunities. Looking forward to hearing from everyone.
We do have coffee and tea in the back for anybody who'd like some.
Issues and constraints for the town center, and what are the most important opportunities and ideas to improve or enhance the town center? And so as we're going through this, we're hoping you think of what those things might be, and our discussion afterwards will really focus around those two key questions. And we'll come back. You don't have to memorize that one. So first, we'll start off with land use patterns and policy. And the next slide shows some of our land use patterns. As you can see, this is a node of commercial land uses and surrounded by residential. And so what we see here is listed all the different kinds of commercial that are in the town center. There's quite a great mix. And we also have some civic uses as well. We're sitting in the town hall and also the town museum. And of course, this is the makeup of this nice little node that we know as Town Center. The parcel sizes, most parcels are less than a half acre in size, so smaller on the smaller side. But there's a few larger parcels, but no parcel is larger than 2.5 acres. The small parcel size is really part of the historic sizing with it's consistent with that 19th century building pattern, but for today's kind of development, it's pretty small as far as being developable. But and we see here actually that in this town center that there's a few owners that share a lot of the properties here. Of the Gilberts own 4 parcels in the center on the east side. The Roberts own 3 parcels on the west side, and that's the light blue. And then there's other owners, and such as 2 other owners that own 2 parcels each. So this area is owned by a few. The town center zoning has, there's 22 parcels that are zoned community commercial, representing the majority of the study area. And 2 parcels are zoned rural residential, and that is where we are now, town-owned parcels, which contain the town hall and museum and public parking lots. And then in the green, you see the 1 parcel that's zoned open space for natural resources, and it's permanently protected from development by voter measure. And the voter adopted measures, we've heard a little bit about them. Here's just a review. There's Measure J, and that the intent of that was to preserve low density character and prevent commercial creep. And then the impact is that it really restricts residential zoning and prohibits commercial uses on town-owned parcels, and it limits zoning changes to if you want to change it, you have to vote. And so that means that there's limited building heights along Woodside Drive, Woodside Road. And then there's Measure 1 that was voted on in 1989, and that intent was to allow civic uses in the town center while preserving rural open space. And so that's what allowed the town hall to be placed here and the public parking, and it set a 50% open space rule for public benefit residential parcels. It also allowed low impact public uses supporting the town center. And more recently, Measure A, the intent of that was to expand the community serving function of the town center, and it allowed parcels behind Kenyatta Corners to be developed with parking or outdoor dining. And so there's some more amenities to the area. So I'm going out, and there's a couple other design regulations that are applicable to the area. There are no formal design guidelines for the town center, so that may be something that can result of this effort. The previous planning efforts emphasized preserving character but did not result in the adoption of actual standards, so that speaks to needing to define them more, perhaps with objective design standards. And Measure J and the zoning code are really the de facto form-based controls for limiting development in terms of height and density. So with that, I'm going to hand this over to Ryan, who will talk about community.
Great. Actually, before we move into this slide, I want to just say something really quickly. The aspect of community design that we're looking at is really the life between the buildings. One thing I want to say that's not in these slides is that Woodside is a really precious place with so much architectural diversity, human scale, and an incremental development pattern that really makes it one of a kind. There just can't be another place like Woodside because it's developed over, you know, more than 100 years. So those aspects, I think, are jewels. They're very precious. And it's that's a very long slideshow that we could do maybe another time. Tonight, we really want to focus on the life that stitches all those elements together. And part of it is intrinsic to the rural context that you live in. And part of it, in some places, it might just be accidental the way it kind of all came together. Entrances and gateways. So kind of one of the first things you notice when you approach Whiskey Hill Road on Woodside is the buildings are set back from the street. There's kind of a wide openness to it. And it doesn't have the formal street elements that you often experience entering into a town. You don't have the sidewalks on both sides with street lights and things like that. And that's just part of its character right now. There's limited signage. There's a few landmark elements, the Pioneer Hotel, the horses, you know, there's Roberts Market. These are definitely landmarks. The landscape, in a formal sense, does not cue arrival when you get there. So, and different parts of the city do it with kind of different levels of success. So that's something we'll want to look at with each of, with all of you, to kind of look at those different locations in the city and see what's an appropriate improvement. Next slide. So it functions as a rural village core. There's, you know, a big story of this village core is about the necessities that are here. And the kind of exciting thing is a lot of these are legacy businesses that provide your daily needs and bring the community together. And they're run by people that are a part of this community, which is also an important aspect. There's very little residential or mixed use presence. It's really a place to work and a place to shop or eat. Past planning efforts, we think really, from what we understand, have stalled due to a lack of community consensus. So that's something that we really want to work on in this process, make sure we move forward with that. The opportunities, I think, there's some room for improvement with some of the public realm, how people get from one side of the town to the other, whether you're on foot, on horse, in your car, or on bike. So enhance the pedestrian experience, reinforce the civic identity. And of course, that's a big discussion with you about what that civic identity is. Introduce design guidance. You know, the word standards is interesting. There's nothing standard about Woodside. So setting up standards for Woodside is, you know, a very interesting task and a sensitive one. Constraints, physical limitations. Actually, the thing that I think is fascinating about Woodside is it's not flat. It goes up, it goes down. There's a steep terrace on the back towards the parking. These are all really interesting constraints that are also what make it Woodside. Fragmented ownership. I like to call this fine grain parcelization. This is where it's not one, one giant project per block. This is where there's, I think, a lot of opportunity for texture, which you have. Informal circulation patterns. There's a strong preservation ethos, of course. And then you have a direct connection to decisions through the ballot box, which is also an important consideration. Next slide, circulation. So the big spine is Woodside Road, of course. And what I love about it is it brings the connections from Whiskey Hill, the Mountain Home, and Kenyatta Road all together. And it creates these two really neat intersections where the two ends of the village core are really, really well defined. And there's some, I think, some opportunities that come with that and some constraints or challenges, one of which is safe crossing for all ages. Those are things we'll want to look at. The other really interesting pattern is people have seemed to have charted their own path across the city from Whiskey Hill to Mountain Home through the backside of the retail properties. And so that's a discussion in itself as well. Next slide. The pedestrian network. When we first walked the town, I was thinking, this is a locals joint. You know, if you live here, you know these paths, but I am lost. And how do you get lost in a small town? So it was really great. We had Sage to guide us, and we experienced the equestrian trails, the sidewalks, the creek, all kinds of things. There are a combination of sidewalks that are paved, that are gravel, that are dirt, that are not sidewalks. And they engage horse traffic, bike traffic, vehicular traffic. So we're going to want to look at those very closely, hear from you about your experiences on this, and then find ways to make adjustments where necessary. Next slide. The bicycle network. It seems like the word bicycle is a very sensitive topic here. So we'll have lots of discussions around that. And there's different populations it serves, the local community and then the recreational kind of larger regional community. What was a little surprising and interesting is that sometimes one side of the street is a bike lane and sometimes the other side of the street is not. It's a sharrow. And so it creates these different like behavior patterns of cyclists and cars that are a little hard. They're not predictable. And so I think we'll want to look at that really closely. Minimal bike racks. It'd be good to know in a little more depth if that's strategic or intentional. So equestrian circulation coming from El Cerrito, north of Berkeley, this is a first for me. So we're excited to work with this and understand the sensitivities to horses in terms of path surface and visibility. The sensitivities to safety concerns, how traffic, signage, and those things work together. We saw the crosswalk signs for the horses are way up high, which is kind of neat. I guess I'm rambling, all right. Keep going. Key findings. This is the one that I'm really excited about is this intersection of Woodside and Kenyatta. It connects so many of the town's critical elements. And finding a way to make some improvements there, I think, is a huge opportunity. The pedestrian connectivity, getting from one side to the other, it could be streamlined a little bit. improved, I think. And then really looking at what is intentional or not intentional about circulation through the private parking. Vehicle conflicts with bikes and horses is also an important consideration. Parking, so this, you know, interestingly, for a small town, it touches a broad base. So you have folks that come over from all over the peninsula to bike through here, visit. And then you have people who are contractors working on homes and other various projects that are coming from all over the Bay Area. And then you have the local local population. So all these folks are serving, and then you have staff that are working at the local residence. So there's a lot of different populations coming together on like three roads. And so that's kind of impressive. And you have a parking supply that's trying to meet the needs and timing of all those different populations. So parking demand is really crunched at peak hours. And as far as we understand, lunch is that peak hour in the middle of the day. There's private parking conflicts, a lack of designated employee parking. It was interesting, we had an interview where we learned that oftentimes the parking lots fill up with everybody but the customer, you know, by 9 o'clock in the morning. So it's a challenge, but these are things we can work through. Restaurants and cafes are struggling to expand service because of these constraints. So that limits some of the things that you get to experience in your town. No coordinated system for enforcement or signage. So having something that's user-friendly across all the properties and predictable is an important aspect. And then I think this last point is you have parking that's under public control, private property control, and then parking that's governed by the PAD. We counted using a combination of in-person counting, aerial, Google Earth, about 577 spaces, and I'm going to add plus or minus on that. And you're welcome to go out and confirm that number. but we are thinking that's pretty close. Most of that is off street, 92%. A lot of that is privately owned. And then what was interesting, we did another thing where we guessed, you know, or estimated by drawing area lines on AutoCAD of all the businesses in town to kind of gauge about how much square footage of commercial buildings you have in gross square footage. And we looked at where buildings were two stories or one stories, and we did kind of a broad calculation, and you have about 5.6 spaces per 1,000 square feet of commercial development, gross development. So that includes back of house service corridors, as well as customer service areas. And so that's a good number. But I would say the challenge with this is the distribution of the parking. In some areas, you have probably a little more parking than you need. In some areas, you don't have enough parking. So that's where the customer experience is strained. Next slide. And this is speaking to some of that distribution. I would say it's evenly distributed, but it's not evenly in the intensity of the commercial uses is not even. So you're seeing a lot of a pinch point at the Kenyatta Corner and Roberts Market. Next slide. The Parking Assessment District. Gene's going to answer all questions on this because I'm still wrapping my head around it. Established 1988, and the big goal here was to basically improve the parking experience for all the folks using the commercial businesses. And so 163 spaces across 13 parcels, bond funding to make sure it remains public, and then future expansion is in the hands of voters. So again, Gene will take care of the details on this. Next slide. So your parking demand exceeds supply at peak hours in certain areas of the city. Private parking conflicts are part of the challenge. Opportunities could exist for improvement through shared parking and or parking enforcement. And there are other ideas, and we want to hear from you what your ideas are on these things. Economic development, background and trends. So you have pretty much only local businesses here, which is beautiful. I mean, this is an authentic community, and every business here is almost, you know, is a resident of the community and is building this community. And I think the stability that you have here in Woodside is a reflection of that. And I think that's really, really valuable. So we want to make sure that the moves that we make and any changes are done in a way that help serve those existing businesses and make sure that they're operating the same, if not better, than they are today. They've survived major disruptions, not just COVID, but downturns in office and retail sectors that have affected other communities. So this is a precious resource. And the stability is tied to commitment of the property owners, the business owners, and the people that live here for supporting them. Key findings, we do think that a place this precious has demand for more businesses and growth. The big challenge is we have to park it and figure out how that growth fits into the values that you have for your city and its experience and the physical constraints. Significant parking and access constraints make expansions difficult. We heard this firsthand in the terms of counting chairs and how more seats impact parking supply. So there's a lot of minutia here that actually feeds into the big picture. The parking shortages and access issues cause challenges for existing businesses in terms of sales and sustainability. So it's sensitive. Jane, I'll hand it back to you.
So our plan will be also accompanied by an environmental impact report. And so some of the things that I speak to in this environmental background and context will be looked at in further detail with that process as well. So with that process, we're looking at all different kinds of things. So air quality is one of them. And the findings were that there are some unhealthy exposures that are on the large roads, which is expected on large roads. And then there's some cancer risk thresholds that are exceeded near the gas station, but this is also defined as normal. But these are just to be very transparent about what is what the findings are. The CEQA and the EIR will further study these thresholds, so do not be alarmed. They are actually pretty normal and expected for those kinds of uses. Earlier, we heard public comment about the cultural resources with no buildings and structures being on the historical register, but we will, I want to acknowledge that public comment and also say we can go back and look at this again. And it will also be studied in more detail in the CEQA process. And so there's also likely a big potential for unrecorded Native American resources near the creeks and springs in this area. There's further environmental constraints. As Ryan was saying, the topography here, it's not flat. And so you can see it ranges from a low of 360 feet above sea level near Dry Creek Trail to a high of 420 feet along the back of the village open space. And so we're contending with a 60-foot grade change, which is pretty significant if you think about 10 foot per floor. So it's like six stories of change. So that is, you probably feel it if you're going for a hike around here. And then Dry Creek Stream Corridor, there is a setback required of 50 feet from the center line, which is also has an impact as well. So that is these are both constraints that we'll have to contend with when we're thinking about new things. And it's not a surprise that we're in California and there's earthquake potential here. So the geology and soils are a part of that. And so what's good to know is that we're not in a landslide area. And then also what's typical for this area is that most of the area is located in a liquefaction zone. So if there was an earthquake, that would become a problem. We're on a fault trace. This is not an active fault. I mean, it is an active fault. It is fault trace, not the it is not the fault line. So that's shown in blue on this map, and that runs through the plan area especially near Woodside Road and Mountain Home Road. And the area between Whiskey Road and Mountain Home Road is in, and this is the Ahlquist-Priolo Special Study Zone, and that means you have to study for earthquakes, in short. There are a few other environmental hazards, and those are pretty typical for buildings built before 1979 for asbestos and lead-based paint. And then for noise and vibration, the noise levels are mostly from vehicles, and they range within 55 to 70 dBA. And I think this is, again, something that is expected. And so any further traffic trips that are part of the future development in the area are also like unlikely to result in any noise increase. So that's something that is observed too. For hydrology, there's limited portions of the plant area adjacent to the creeks that are what is known as Zone X shaded. That's the orange area, which means that the 100-year flood would be fully contained in this within a flood control structure. So this has to do with flooding, and you can kind of see where the impact could be. The rest of the plant area is in Zone X, which is unshaded, which are areas outside of the 0.2% chance of annual flood. So you're in better shape. And then finally, wildfire is a risk around here, as I'm sure you're all very aware. And so, but the plan area is not within a state responsibility area, SRA, or in a very high fire hazard severity zone. And that so that indicates that this is, while there is a risk, it's minimal in the range of potential risks. So the plan area is in a local responsibility area, but most of the plan area is within the wildland urban interface area, and that should inform some of the thinking in the future. All right, we're wrapping this up. There's a summary of findings. We're looking at some of our strengths and constraints. And of course, we invite you to help us identify even more than these. But your strengths are really that this is a distinctive rural character and scenic setting for a town center. That there is the strength that also includes strong equestrian identity and regional trail connections. And also the stable, as Ryan had spoken to, the stable commercial core with low business turnover. And of course, there's a lot of active civic uses here that are a great strength to the area that really anchor the area. And there's a community desire to maintain this small town scale and identity, and that truly is a strength. Constraints include the incomplete pedestrian, bike, and equestrian infrastructure that we saw in the mapping and in experiencing it ourselves. There's also a constraint in the limited parking supply and also the circulation through the parking lots. And then there's also, this constraint is one that it has to do with land use. There is currently no mixed use or residential zoning that is within the, well, there is the outside area, the single family zoning right outside the town center, but none within it. And then of course, a constraint is any of the ballot box policies such as Measure J, that limit the ability for businesses to grow and evolve. And then another constraint could be that there's no local transit service and that this area is very car dependent, and the fragmented ownership also may limit some of the coordination. And then on the next one, we see our opportunities, and then there's threats and concerns. And so with opportunities here, I think, as Ryan has spoken to a little bit as well, there are a lot of public realm opportunities to improve the sidewalks, the crossings, providing nice places to sit, perhaps more outdoor dining. There's also opportunities to address the parking a little bit better, either with shared parking or other parking options like using parking apps or valet strategies to improve the efficiency of the area. There's a great opportunity that I know has been addressed a little bit, but the safe routes to school is a good tie-in in the way we can and a start to the way we can think about enhancing the walkability of the area. And then, of course, community events and activation will also help to make this an even stronger town town center. And then the potential to allow for new housing may also meet some of the state mandates for that, and also provide for higher density near these services and businesses that are really key to the area. And then our threats and concerns really have to do with balancing community sentiment between preserving character and accommodating improvements. And then we have, we're also aware of, a growing mistrust in the engagement process based on the last update. So we're hoping to make this experience a little bit better than that one. And then there's regulatory constraints that deter private investment as well. And peak hour congestion and parking is really a high frustration. It has a great impact on business viability. And the loss of the small town feel is something that there are a lot of concerns about. We've heard many, and I'm sure some of you may have that feeling as well. So, if we don't do it well, I think that is something that we have concern about. So with that, we come to the end of us presenting, and we'd love to hear from you. We're putting up these two initial questions that we had. So they were, what are the key issues and constraints for the town center from your point of view? And what are the most important opportunities and ideas to improve or enhance the town center? And with that, I'm going to hand it to Kevin here to facilitate, and I'm going to move over and take some notes as well. So this is your turn to let us know.
Great. Thank you, Jane and Ryan. And forgive me for standing, but I want to be able to see everybody and be able to call on everybody, and this is the best way to do it. So we've been talking to you a lot for half of the meeting now. Now's your chance to talk. So we want to hear from you. We do have these kind of key questions that we want to start with. You can also ask questions if there's something that came up that you didn't quite understand. Did we use some terminology that you hadn't heard before? We can explain that better. But our first question that we'd like to ask is, what are the key issues and constraints for the town center? We've shown you what is basically a SWOT analysis, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. You may or may not agree with some of those. Maybe some of what we've said are constraints, or maybe you don't think so. Or alternatively, opportunities. Maybe you see some opportunities we haven't seen there. So I want to hear from you, and if people want to raise their hands, and then we'll kind of go around. I see a hand with Richard, so if we'd like to start.
Yeah, so I would mention the state of California. So the entity holds fee title to Woodside Road, of course, and I think there's been a fair bit of talk today about potential pedestrian improvements, entry gateway landscape and signage improvements, and you have this past town history with the state working on safe routes to schools. Rooted around Woodside Road. So I think there's the potential to build on that. Second would be the high voltage power lines, which are easy to miss, but are accompanied by easements. So those easements preclude development underneath, but also on either side of the lines themselves. So two items.
Those would be constraints. So yeah, thank you. And also thank you for others. If you have, we did get the letter from Richard, which I think was distributed to everybody. If you see other things that you want to put in writing after the fact and let us know, then that also works as well. So we appreciate all the thought that went into that. Lyle, yes.
Yes, one of the constraints that was mentioned is the current zoning and the limitations for the current zoning on building heights within the town center area. Could Jean and or Sage please elaborate on what the current height restrictions are, just for the benefit of everyone here on the committee?
Sure. Thank you, Lyle. And thanks for give me that primer before. So we did look into it a little bit more. So you have the area in which that was shown, kind of the commercial core, and then you have
area with the museum and town hall. So area A is kind of the commercial core. Area B is the maybe civic core, if you want to call it that. So the height limits set up in the code through the adopted measures, it is 17 feet as measured from the edge of the public right-of-way. So as you all will notice, is the public right-of-way is often a little bit taller than where the buildings sit themselves. So you actually measure 17 feet above the public right-of-way edge. So where the buildings are, maybe it gives them another foot or two or a little bit more, depending on the elevation. And that is specific to the building frontages facing Woodside Road. The code talks about all buildings within 100 feet of Woodside Road. So you're just looking at that, those building frontages. So you'll notice, whereas the backsides of the building have a much taller height. And those are just governed by what's tied to the front. And then in the civic core, and that specific area doesn't mention anything about number of stories. It just gives you that height limit. And then this area B, which is identified in the town center plan, where this building and the museum are, there's a height limit of 21 feet tall, but specifically talks about a one-story height limit in that area. And so those are the current height limits that are set in the code by the voter initiative. And one other thing that came up is it's possible that some of these buildings, maybe where the post office is, that possibly may exceed that height limit. It was built before these standards were put in place. And although it may exceed the height limit, I haven't done detailed measurements. What are called non-conforming situations, maybe if you're over the existing height limit, those can always be replaced. So whether there's a natural disaster or if someone needs to rebuild a wing for whatever reason or rebuild the entire structure, they can maintain the existing conditions. They just wouldn't be able to go over it without some changes to the code.
So an existing two-story non-conforming building that was grandfathered in, if the owner wished to repurpose that or remodel it or update it, and you went through the economic analysis and it was cheaper to demolish and start over, that could be rebuilt as two stories?
That's correct. It'd keep that same kind of 3D envelope is the way to kind of look at it.
Thank you.
I'll just add, I know there was an earlier question about Measure J and where this plan might lead to. So there's no foregone conclusions. There's not been a determination. So this process is able to look at that. And so somebody might say, okay, Measure J is a constraint. Others may say, I like Measure J. It keeps the character. So we're neutral in terms of the consultants and the team. This is really for the community to make that determination. Other questions, comments? Yes, Patricia. I don't know if any of us could answer that question. Jean has something to say, though.
Yeah, constraints that are put in place by way of an initiative can only be removed by way of an initiative. An initiative can be either a citizen-proposed initiative or a council-proposed initiative. Either way, whether a citizen initiated it or the council initiated it, that measure would go to the voters for approval, yes. Yes, it could. And I should say, in addition to the measures that were shown in the slides, there was another measure proposed back in 1988 that the council adopted. It didn't go to vote, and that was Save Village Hill, and that's why you have the property across the street here in open space. My understanding is it is an open space, and I don't know if Sage has anything further. It's not. This was established by a voter initiative, just zoning it as open space. So again, it would be, that was an initiative that was proposed by the citizens, but adopted by the council. It can only be changed again through the initiative process. If the voters, if a majority of voters approved it, yes.
I see Richard. Anyone else first before? I know we've heard from Richard already. Happy to hear more, but want to also give opportunities to others. Don, we'll get back to you, Richard.
I'll choose an opportunity to reinforce. And this is the design guidelines.
Hey.
Want to adjust something?
Just speak more into the mic and then thanks.
Design guidelines. So I think as you stated in the presentation, I mean, the character of the town center today is largely just an evolution by happenstance. We ended up with what we ended up with. And so if the goal is to preserve that going forward, I think guidelines would be a necessity to ensure that we provide restrictions on any development to ensure that they adhere to whatever we could define as the character. That by itself would be a grand undertaking to try and capture what we have. But I want to register a vote of support for design guidelines.
Thank you. Julie.
Wanted to bring up something that was brought up to me by another citizen. I think most of this is steady state, but we sometimes have events happen. For example, traffic on 280 builds up, and then people start cutting through town, and we end up with a juggernaut, like all down Kenyatta Road, or there's an event, even, you know, a camp at the school or something, and we end up with a big juggernaut. So that's one thing that I think we should be thinking of as a situation, a constraint perhaps. But related to that, this person's specific was concern was around fire evacuation. When we have this type of thing happen, it would be like a devastating situation if we had a big fire coming through town and we had to evacuate, we had to get fire trucks through. And if we're talking about, you know, figuring out ways to more efficiently get cars in and out, that's all great, steady state. But when we have something like this happen, I think, you know, dealing with these fluxes and flows, and especially in times of emergency, these are things that have to be on our radar screen.
Thank you. And also appreciate you are all delegates to your various communities. So as you do hear from people who ask you, please bring these questions to the group because that's really a big function of this committee. Did staff have anything? I know where the emergency evacuation gets into things like hazard plans and such. Is there anything to add to that?
Yeah, the town is currently working on emergency preparedness evacuation study based on modeling for fires, and we will be bringing a document to the emergency preparedness committee that it eventually makes its way to town council for adoption, which will be kind of the backbone to addressing some of these issues and just educating the community on the current constraints they have in their individual neighborhoods.
Thank you. Yes, Carly, excuse me.
I'd like to piggyback off of what Richard was mentioning about Woodside Road. Parents have a lot of concerns about pedestrians, biking, e-bikes, kids getting to school safely because a lot of kids walk or bike to school. They've talked about wanting to do the gravel walkway that's on the left side if you're going to our school, but doing that on the right side as well.
Thank you. And Richard, I promised we'd get back to you. So if you would like to have further remarks and perhaps also
so
related to
one
that.
One item, maybe I could direct it to Jean. Does the outstanding litigation on Measure A have an impact on that measure? And do we need to plan for both outcomes in that litigation?
The ongoing litigation, right now there's a trial date set for December, and so we should have an answer to whether or not the court upholds the council's approval of the amendment to the conditional use permit early next year. We'll keep you apprised of that. It's just now in the briefing stage. Happy to make those briefs available if you'd like to see them. I think you should... I think you should look open-mindedly to all options and not let that ongoing litigation be viewed as a constraint that you cannot, so that you could not talk about a development of that property.
Two other comments. Piggybacking on what Carly said, that was arguably, Safe Routes to School was arguably the only good thing that came out of the 2013-2014 meetings, which stretched over a long period of time. The council used that process, which did not reach conclusion, to highlight the need for Safe Routes to Schools. And then that triggered a bunch of public hearings and the like, which resulted in improvements. But I think you're right, further improvements could be done. And the area plan has been extended to the west to accommodate that. Second is just a brief comment on what Don said earlier. Happenstance ruled the day here. There were actually five gas stations at one point on this side of Woodside Road. In fact, the island that you see at the southeast corner of Woodside Mountain Home Road was a gas station in and of itself, had a gas station pumps, and it was well known because people would come down Kenyatta Road, fail to brake, and slam into the gas station itself. So it took a beating over time. But then you had one at Gilbert Center, at our property, Cyphers, the pub. So you had a whole string of them. And to a certain extent, all the buildings on those locations developed as a result of those needs. So I'd comment.
Thank you. Others, yes. Ehsan.
Yes, thank you. I think for the opportunities, I think, you know, the town center, it's a bunch of buildings and space, but it's the people that go there and the community, right? We're a small community, like you said. It's seeing your neighbors and your friends there that makes it interesting. Otherwise, it's just a space. And so I think, you know, kind of some of the comments that were said, making it welcoming for people, making it easy, but at the same time, not making it so easy that everyone uses as a cut through. So I think that's going to be the tough balance. But, you know, Portola Valley has their Portola Valley Town Center. We don't have a big field in a similar fashion besides the school. This is our meeting area. This is where you see people. I think looking for opportunities to encourage that and bring people out just builds more community and makes everybody hopefully happier. Not everybody, most people. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Yes, Daniel.
So I've spent a little bit of time already talking with some of our folks in District 4, and I hear the same themes over and over again that sort of align with the opportunities. I think the one big theme is that the residents really want to see a broader mix of consumer retail that draws them in. That means they don't have to drive down the hill to Atherton, Redwood City. One of our folks actually ran a query through ChatGPT. Shows we're in Woodside, right? What's the difference between Woodside today and what a super healthy small town would have? And it spit out a list of like six things that were exactly what we kept hearing over and over again from different people, right? And what kinds of things they'd like to have here as services. And I could share that later. On the threat side, it relates to that. Oh, one more thing. People really want public gathering spaces. There's nothing, right, in Woodside other than maybe the hub. So the ability to come together for community is thought integrated in this process. Those are the top two things I heard over and over again on the opportunity side from residents. On the threat side, what's not in here is money. So how's the town going to pay for this? You know, help fund all these initiatives? How are we going to work with Caltrans, who's tight on funding because they own funding around Woodside Road? Two big issues. The third one that I promised to kind of keep bringing to the forefront is how do we incent our property owners to want to do something? Because we're going to ask them to invest, presumably as part of this, to make changes, and they have to know that they're going to make money and thrive. And so I didn't see that thinking in the presentation so far, is the paying for it and economic incentives for a property owner that really rose to the top in the discussions.
That's really good feedback, and I think we can take that forward as we do start looking at opportunities what kinds of incentives might there be? Depending on what the, what the vision is that we're hearing from the community. Also, it's a great opportunity to plug the survey that is active right now. And already there's been how many? 150? it's doing very well. So if talk to your friends and neighbors, have them take that list from ChatGPT, put it in the survey response. That sounds really interesting and can really help us get a kind of a sense from the community what they're interested in too. Yes, Matt.
A number of comments. First, I'll pile on the gathering spaces. I'm going to make very similar points with Portola Valley, where you know they're able to do things like TV Palooza. There's just exactly. So
what is that? Lots for tots.
It's a running race, but they finished at town center and have a big park.
Yeah, okay. Right. So, and there was talk with Measure A of an amphitheater. I'm not sure actually where that's sitting these days, but like those concepts, you know, we have the Village Hub, which kind of filled a void, which is great. But it kind of just, I guess this theme of happenstance, right? This was because, you know, Pastor Alva thought it was a great idea and, you know, was able to do it, but these, like, it's very ad hoc. So I think gathering spaces is definitely one. Going back to the housing pieces, I think there's an overall theme of just like smart growth. I know Steve, we talked about this as well, right? And like, there's an opportunity to have not really suboptimal outcomes of housing elements. And what does that mean? That means like having, for example, some housing that could be near a public transit center. So maybe if there were some mixed use in the town center, it would make sense for, you know, some kind of transit to actually go there, right? Because there would be actually a center and a stop might make sense. And I think there's opportunities for housing that serves the community a bit better. Woodside's not exactly the cheapest place to live. And, you know, our local employers don't pay the salaries needed to live here or anywhere close. And so, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to serve those in our community, teachers, firefighters, those who work at Roberts, et cetera. So I think that could be a good opportunity as well. Equestrian, right? We are an equestrian community. At the same time, actually talking to my wife about this quite a bit. So my kids were in Woodside Junior Riders. For 2 months out of the summer, they're able to go ride, and it's cheap and it's inclusive and whatnot. Outside of that, if you don't have a horse property, you can't do it. So, you know, there's often, you know, talk of barns being knocked down because there's not a vibrant equestrian community. And I think there's an opportunity to think, are there ways to town center's constrained, so maybe this is like in other areas. But to actually make that where it's a community of folks being able to onboard to that community if they're not already part of it. Thoughts?
Great. Thank you. All interesting points. Yes, I see Stephen.
Excuse me, Steve, if you could just speak into the microphone so we make sure we record it.
You might need to press it again.
No? Here's, how about this one?
Thank you.
No? Can you hear me? Okay. When Caltrans was, before the department, the highway department in those days was talking about building 280, Woodside resisted it. And as a result, 280, and as did the San Francisco watershed, and that as a result, 280 was built down to the watershed from the north and up to Woodside Road from the south. And in the interim, the 280 traffic was funneled down Kenyatta Road and Woodside Road. And during that time, Caltrans widened this stretch of road out here and made it much wider than is appropriate for a town center. And the standard station was torn down in the middle of the road at that time. And so I think we could really make it feel, you know, get some of the arrival you're talking about by making Woodside Road from 280 to Kings Mountain Road, basically, look like you're supposed to drive 20 miles an hour. I mean, if we could reshape the road so that people slowed down, it would make the pedestrian opportunities much better. It'd be much safer for kids to get to school. It would be nicer for people to walk in town, and being in these public spaces we want would be much nicer. And so I think that's important thing is to change the way the road looks so it doesn't look like a highway. It looks like a downtown street.
Great, thank you. And I think that, you know, credit to the town council who, when we were looking at the boundaries in that initial meeting, they said, let's extend it so we can really capture the roadway. And I think that is the opportunity. One of our team members that's not here tonight is Alta Planning, and they are doing traffic, but also they do traffic, pedestrian, bikes, equestrian, all of it. So it's really an opportunity to look at that and see what opportunities there might be to create something that is maybe a little less highway-like. I thought I saw with Steve, did you have a hand up?
Yeah, thank you. I guess first I want to say I hope this is a great opportunity. I mean, I think this committee, especially with the property owners that own property in the town center participating in this, it gives me some hope. I mean, I was part of that 2013 study, and actually, I would insist actually that everybody read all the ideas that came up in 2013, because I don't think anything has changed. I don't think anybody would alter any of their thoughts from that. I think the only thing that would be added to it, and Matt certainly struck on, is the housing element now has put a critical spin on what are we going to do with the public land or open space. And you know, we shouldn't be afraid to actually take that to the people of the town to figure out how we're going to solve it. So there isn't this hysteria in the next, well, it's going to be about 6 years from now, when we can't come up with 400 new homes in town in the next 8 years or something like that. So, I mean, I think people are ready to be tuned into what are we really going to do? And what are we going to do about parking? And I think whether it's this group or the town or someone, we need to get public transportation to come through town. You know, based on, I think it's Assembly Bill 2087 or something, we can actually, development can be adjusted to accommodate those needs if there is public transportation. So parking isn't the key instrument that precludes development and, you know, housing and things like that. So I think we should do that. So I think Dawn was saying, or no, somebody was saying, money. I really don't know how anybody's going to pay for all our great ideas. And that's really scary. I mean, I'm as an architect. There just isn't money out there for anything, you know, more than groceries and your house payments. So I really don't know, you know, what people are going to do. I think we should make sure we consider all options and even, you know, float all those things, like, you know, bond measures or whatever it takes, or, you know, other measures to open up those things. So please, I insist, if everybody could go to the 2013 minutes, I think it was May 28th, the staff report. It's really enlightening to see and kind of address all the work that was done. I think staff did a great job. I think at the time it was Jackie Young, and she led that like a champion. So thank you again to all the property owners that are taking the time to participate. I mean, this is hard. I mean, it's a hard pill to swallow that we're talking about your property and your futures, and it's tricky. So thanks again, and see if we can develop the next plan.
Thank you. And I do want to take an opportunity. We've looked through those files from 2013, and, you know, a lot of good thought went into there. I know people here, people maybe back here as well, were involved in that effort. And a lot of good ideas came out of it. I think we're also learning from where it did kind of go sideways, and we're intending to not have that process happen here. But, you know, do want to acknowledge the hard work that people put in. It's really interesting reading all those minutes, all those reports, and a lot of work went into that.
So one more thing.
Sure.
Richard, there was one other thing that came out of the 2013 meeting that did get implemented. And that little triangle on this side of 280 that somebody planted and beautified, that came out of the 2013 project. And I think that might be the only concrete thing that I saw happen out of it, but that happened. So not nothing,
Small victories, but yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. I will get back to Matt in a second, but I did see some hands over on this side. So, and I lost track of who was first. So we'll just kind of go in order with Barry first.
Doesn't matter. Thanks. I'm really liking the suggestions I hear. I think this is a really good start. And I like the idea of unconstrained thinking, at least initially. I don't have anything to add to that piece, but I do have a question on this. One slide that's the area plan boundary. Okay. And you talked about extending it, and you have the green area on it, not to get too wonky specific. You have the green area that goes out to the little store, the other to the down to 280. Does that, I'm trying to understand what the real scope is, because if you look at what's along those lines, you've got a combination of civic use like the school and the library, but you also have residences. Is this extension meant to be just the public right of way?
That is correct.
So yeah. Nothing. So we can't include in ideas anything, the library space or the school space or any of that.
That was not the intention. Okay. So the intention was really focus on just what's going on in the road, make the road work. There were discussions at the very beginning. You know, should those properties be included as well? That seemed to feel like it was then going to become a much bigger effort. So at this point, we're really focusing on that core of the town center, but then also how do you get to and from the town center? Yes, Caroline.
Thank you. Yes, it's been great to hear all of these ideas so far. I had two different areas that I wanted to touch on in just a couple minutes. The first is the streetscaping and the landscaping. You know, for a town that really prioritizes the rural character and is known for our forested areas and tree canopy, native plants, you know, there's so much pavement and there's so much that prioritizes the vehicular car experience rather than that of perhaps those going at a slower pace, pedestrians, equestrians, et cetera. And so I hope that the architecture and design will be thinking about that, how we can incorporate native plants more, and you know what that streetscape, what that hardscaping and landscaping looks like together. I don't know if traffic circles were explored for either Whiskey Hill, Kenyatta roads, but I've seen those succeed in other areas. You know, Stanford's campus, for instance, like they converted many, many intersections to traffic circles with really nice landscaping. And then the second area that I wanted to touch on is public art. You know, commissioning from either well-known artists, local artists, having design competitions, or if the town settles on a couple of different artists. And, you know, that could really, I think, motivate people to engage and get involved, whether they're voting for something that's already been, well, not voting, but, you know, they're submitting their input for something that's already created or commissioning something to be done. Or, you know, we have school children and many of them might have creative thoughts about public art installations or murals. And also, last thought, the design for any signage or wayfinding. You know, if that could come from our local community soliciting ideas or designs, I think that could be really neat too.
Great, thank you. Speaking of school children, our pop-ups are an excellent opportunity to involve kids, and we hope that they'll come. That's what we found in other communities, is it's really great for families to be able to participate, and we do want to hear from the next generation. So by all means, encourage families and kids that you know to attend. More hands over here. We did have a question from Matt, but also, so we'll, Matt, we'll get back to you, but I don't think we've heard from Sue yet.
I think that's important that we consider native plants in what to do for the town. My question is, well, is there someone that can help us? We a lot of this plan revolves around Highway 84, which is controlled by the state of California. And I'm just bringing this up because on our committee, environment and open space, we've had a number of discussions with Caltrans about native plants, about invasive species, and very little is ever done. And it's huge. It's many hours, days, weeks of discussion, and nothing happens. So I think it would be helpful if we had guidance from someone with true expertise in working with Caltrans, because we could come up with some really great ideas, but we have this highway that we do not control, that's controlled by Caltrans, the state of California. So someone can help us say, well, that's a good idea, but to implement this would be very, very difficult. Or to implement this would be easy, that's a great idea, but other ideas might be impossible. Or we'd have to pay them ourselves. The town would have to pay for them, and the cost of doing something like that, something might be outrageous. So, I mean, the improvement we did in Woodstock, and the entrance to done by donations from the town, from people on the committee, so we donated money to do those improvements. But I think it'll be helpful because we can spend a lot of time talking about what we would like Highway 84 to look like, but how much influence will we really have with Caltrans, and how much money would we have as a town? Would we have to pay for it all? And even if we wanted to pay for it, would Caltrans approve it? Would the state of California approve it? It's very hard. In my experience, it's very difficult with Caltrans. But I'm sure there are people with certainly more expertise than I have that could help us with that. So we use our time effectively. Don't bark up wrong trees for these. So that's what I ask. We get someone with expertise that can help us understand what, if we're asking for something that may be very, very difficult to do, or if not impossible.
I don't know if any of our other team, okay, because it's definitely something we've been thinking about.
Yeah. So number one, we have a great sub, Alta, that's working on this, that's thinking about things from a transportation standpoint. Number two, and I think even more importantly, is although it's still difficult to deal with Caltrans, there has been a shift at the state level, at both from a design standpoint, when communities are looking at designing their roadways that are take into consideration pedestrians, take into consideration bicycles, take into consideration things like safe routes to schools. They prioritize those type of projects and they do pay attention to that. There's actually been changes like in legislation that requires Caltrans to pay more attention to that. And also from a funding standpoint, although all funding is competitive now, the funding structure has been changed to focus on those type of improvements, where that wasn't the case in 2013, for example. That's something.
This was far after.
Yeah. Well, I would say like landscaping, there's different divisions. The problem with Caltrans a lot of times is a lot of these state agencies, they're humongous. But There have been changes, I would say, within the last 5-7 years, where at least at a legislation change, it might not have dribbled down to the mid-level staff yet, but there has been a push towards making those type of improvements or incentivizing those type of improvements.
There'll be somebody to guide us.
Yes. Yeah, and let me add that because we expanded the right-of-way as part of this project, we are looking, we're going to be asking for a little bit more scope for Alta to potentially create some conceptual designs for improvements, crosswalks, etc. And that's a really strong way to get grants, is you come forward with sort of advanced design work, and that's a strong way to be competitive for grants that helps you move forward with these projects. So that's something we're definitely going to be pushing forward with Alta.
So Sue and then Matt, I promise we'll get back to you.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I got this off the internet from a 2023 Data USA, and I'm rounding numbers. Our community is based on under 18, 22%, 18 to 34-year-olds are 16%, 35 to 64, 38 and 65 plus are 22. Of that, about 1.3% are over 85. Having lived in Woodside and my daughter been to the elementary school, we were very well connected when we were in the school system. Once she went to high school and college, all of a sudden, you have to struggle to be connected. And I think one thing I want to piggyback off what Daniel said, I think a strong asset for our community would be a community center. I don't know if we could do that in lieu of or in addition to the amphitheater, but we pretty much have a fairly balanced population, youth, working folks, seniors. And in that community center, we could do the arts. We could have that serve as a hub to integrate connection, wellness, local culture, arts, music, martial arts, yoga. We could have a game room or hangout area for teens. I think that's lacking in our neighborhood, supervised teen hangout area, networking events, mentors. We've got wonderful folks in the neighborhood with some smarts that could mentor others. In fact, teens could mentor some seniors that don't know how to use their iPhones or computers, but there are folks out there. We could do more parent-child activities. I think we could do maker spaces, art classes, painting workshops, walking groups. I said yoga, fitness. I'd like to see walking paths, benches for those of us who need to sit down after we've walked a little bit. We have one bench on Kenyatta Road, but we could use a few more. And where do we find the funds for this? I don't think that should hold us back from thinking about those things. I think you could have fundraisers, events that you donate to, buy a brick or name a building. So that's just my personal thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, great ideas. Okay, Matt, I promised we'd get back to you.
Yeah, no worries. It's fun because each of these comments sparks so many great ideas. So a few new ones. So the community center, I think, is fantastic. I think we're all talking about kind of gathering spaces. Also sparked, so if you go and buy a sandwich for takeout, for example, there's nowhere to sit and eat. It goes the bench thing. You kind of sit on a curb or something like that. So are there also places to avail yourselves of a sandwich from Roberts? The piece around the pavement, I thought was really interesting, Caroline, that you brought up. And there's an opportunity, I think, to think vertically also, which is we do see a lot of surface parking. And are there kind of win-wins where you hide some of the parking and make it less car-oriented and then get some of the density and housing at the same time with a better overall visual appeal to the town? So I think that would be cool to kind of think in three dimensions in that way. And what could we do if we start burying some of the less attractive pieces? Another opportunity, I don't know if it's an opportunity, this is kind of a question probably for Sage, which is if we were able to find ways to integrate more housing into the town center as part of this, could we go back to the HCD before the 8-year cycle and do some horse trading on sites if we found better ideas?
I think it's an open possibility. At this time, with this more of a longer term plan, without something more concrete that's ready to go, maybe the focus looking forward would be a bit more appropriate.
Steve, yes. Steven.
When Matt brought up about the parking, it's like it reminded me that kind of the problem with Measure J, Measure 1, and Measure A is it seems like a really bad way to do zoning by vote. It doesn't end up in a thoughtful a process, I don't think. I mean, Measure A was supposed to loosen things up, but it went and made multi-level parking like you're talking about illegal. So it like opened up one thing and closed down another. I just don't think we're very good as citizens at dealing with those issues in elections. So I guess I'm thinking, that's something, if we could find a way to get community support to do that kind of zoning through a normal process, I think we'd be much better off.
Other, yes. Daniel, please.
Yes, I wanted to amplify some stuff that Sue said. She's right on some things that I've been hearing about from our residents. So
One is the idea of kids. I think that's a super important constituency that when we think about who are the users, they're, none of them are represented here, right? And I would extend the definition of kids. We think so much about Woodside School, but that ends at age, how old? 14, right? So how about up to age 25 kids, right? There's nothing for them in the town center. And there's really nothing for the little kids outside of the school. So thinking about them as important users, people, kids of all that age, I think would be a really, really big deal. The other constituent that came up before, and you mentioned a little bit as well too, is town staff, teachers, firefighters, those folks. Example, we have a big storm and the folks on Yaz's team from the town live an hour away. So we want them to come and like clog an unclogged drain, and they gotta, you know, they have to drive from an hour away to do that. It's silly. So I think have really focusing on our local employees and workers in the town and having a way to get some of them in here closer, whether it's in the town center core, whether it's in my ADU, I think that's a really important piece of this.
Thank you. Great comments. Yeah, lots of great ideas. So I second what others have observed, that that's why you're all here. You all had great ideas to start with, and we want to hear others that want to contribute. Yes, Lyle.
I just wanted to mention that it looks like the last time this was given a hard look was when the various measures were passed in 1988, and that was 35 years ago. And the work we're doing here is going to carry forward at least to a similar, you know, distance in all likelihood. And it seems, as been mentioned earlier, that our existing commercial buildings have grown haphazardly over time. And at least in the time I've been associated with Woodside, there hasn't been a lot of change. And I would like to see the town center remain vibrant and relevant. And I think we have to allow the commercial property owners some flexibility and some freedom to configure their properties for the next 30 years rather than sort of remaining frozen in time and ending up with, instead of the town center being vibrant, having it be more of a decaying town center like in Menlo Park, which is having serious problems. And it seems like we should not overly constrain the problem, as Matt has mentioned, in that the town center is bounded. There's a finite amount of parking. And with our zoning regulations, that depending upon what you're, you know, using a commercial building for, you have to allocate parking for it. And so just based on the fact that the amount of parking is always going to be finite, that's going to limit the amount of square footage, the amount of stories we could have in the downtown. But within that constraint of parking, it would seem like there would be room to give commercial property owners some pretty wide latitude to configure their properties for the next 30 years.
Thank you. And that speaks to opportunities. So, and I know we've been hearing from a lot of people on various opportunities, things they want to see, but do people have other thoughts of what kinds of opportunities are maybe there that could be seized and for whatever reason haven't, but that's what this plan could be looking for. So I see Stephen has his hand up, and then Patricia as well.
Okay, I mean, when we talk about parking, it's like you mentioned, somebody mentioned that there may be enough parking in all of town center, but it's not in the right places. And I think we actually have a big opportunity on Woodside Road out here where there's all that extra pavement. There actually used to be like 20 parking spots by Village Hill that the town outlawed. So that seems like a no-brainer to use that. It seems like a great place for employees to park from, you know, that would free up more active parking. And also, following up on Steve, that with the bus line, it seems, you know, we ought to find ways to reduce the number of people coming in cars. And I think a lot of people working here would come on a bus, and I would use the bus if it was more convenient. there is a bus line that runs, you know, there's 20-minute bus service to Kenyatta Road during weekdays, to Kenyatta College during weekdays. They come out of Kenyatta College, get on 280 and go down Woodside Road. If they came out the back entrance of Kenyatta College and came down Kenyatta Road and Woodside Road, we could have 20-minute bus service in downtown Woodside.
Thank you. Patricia.
Wasn't necessarily an opportunity, but I've had lots of my friends and neighbors come saying that they would love it if the speed limit on Kenyatta Road was reduced, because if it was reduced, then it would eliminate a lot of the Waze traffic drivers that want to get off the road to miss out on some traffic coming onto the road. So that's something that I promised to bring up.
Thank you. Duly noted. Yes, Caroline.
One issue or limitation that we might contend with, and this is probably, again, for pedestrians and equestrians, is poison oak. So I don't know, you know, all of you are familiar with it, of course. With my two young children, ages 6 and 2, I'm always cautious about it. But a lot of these around the creek or in the back of a lot of the properties, you know, that's just something to contend with. So sure you're aware, but as we're thinking about this, just mitigation or you know, whatever needs to happen to make sure that they're safe in that respect as well.
That's a good point for sure. Others, yes, Julie.
I just have a question. I'm not trying to be controversial, but I'm just reflecting that we are trying to, I think most of us are aligned that we want this to be vibrant. We want, you know, to be thinking forward 30 years. And our town is so small, and the library, the hub, the school, like they're, how do we think about this if we're not thinking about it holistically, if we're really looking for 30 years into the future? Are we able to provide ideas that might touch upon those areas but not implement them at this point? Or are we just closing off that whole part of our town center when we're trying to think about the future?
If others want to address, but yeah, I would say, yeah, the town center does, it's not like there's a hard boundary around it. So implications, what happens in the town center will then influence things that go on throughout other parts of the town and may have influence on future planning efforts. So I, you know, don't want to speak to future planning efforts, but.
So I would just add that, that, yeah, it's good to think about those things. You know, they may not be directly, you know, pinned down in the town center plan itself, but things that come out of this process as a way to kind of engage the larger area. It doesn't have to be part of the town center plan, but still those ideas are good to permeate through this, as well as how that relates to the connectivity. So I don't think those things should be off the table for discussion, although, you know, maybe they'll just touch upon those in the town center plan, where then further actions can be taking place after that.
Other comments, questions? Yes, Richard.
So is there an opportunity at Village Hill for housing? So what is the current status of Village Hill? How do town residents feel about it? Having been here starting in September 1990, when Measure J and Measure 1 were top of mind, is there the potential for change at Village Hill, change for housing, for example? I don't know. I mean, that's why I'm asking it. So I kind of hear a thread piggybacking on the housing element, that there may be a way to open up town center to an idea to accommodate some housing. Would Village Hill be an idea for that location, given that so much time has elapsed since Measure J, Measure 1, arguably, I don't think any of the people who sat behind the dais are still here. They've moved out or have died. Steve's still here. So there are very few of us, say that. So is there an opportunity there? We've sort of focused south of Woodside Road and Kenyatta Corners, Roberts, but is there a chance to do something up there? And it's really an open-ended question to those who are more familiar with town thinking. So.
So I think the technical answer is it would require voter initiative to do something different.
But is now the time to do it? Could you piggyback that, for example, with the amphitheater or public use in the land adjoining here, perhaps doing a revised measure one, splitting off the litigation if it's not resolved on Kenyatta Corners and taking the amphitheater and pairing it up with something at Village Hill? Because in both parcels, you have size, which, relatively speaking, to many of the commercial properties fronting Woodside Road, you don't have. You really have kind of a bigger palette there and here to do those two things. So I'm wondering, I'm simply asking.
So what this process can do is look at those kinds of questions, or if where the plan leads us is to something that would require any of these amendments. We're also doing, you know, we'll do a feasibility both from market perspective, but also implementation. So we'll identify if everybody says that would be a great place for housing. We'll then lay out, well, here's what you would need to happen in order to allow that. And in some instances, it may be a new voter initiative. And in other instances, maybe it's, you know, grant funding for roadway improvements or something. So part of our job is to lay out a roadmap for where the community might want to go. Other ideas, thoughts, questions?
So I'll chime in one more time. what about Woodside Road? Do we have enough right-of-way? Do we have too much right-of-way there? Would Caltrans contemplate reducing the right-of-way to get closer to Steve's vision of a narrower set pair of drive lanes with sufficient bike lanes and pedestrian paths, perhaps, but also a better entry point for Village Hill? Could we ask Caltrans to give something up or to trade something to get this reduced rural feel road that we might augment safe routes to schools with? So that's kind of a outside the box.
Yes.
We have three Caltrans execs coming to the next circulation committee meeting next month, and that is a question we could ask them. What would they think? What would the process be if you'd like us to do that? Easily done.
And we do plan to have constructive conversations with Caltrans, and that's where our traffic sub-consultants, they've had those conversations in other planning efforts. So, you know, we can't promise anything, but other than we can have that dialogue, and they've at least had some experience doing that with other communities. I am curious, we've heard references to on-street parking at one point that was on Woodside Road. How long ago did that go away? Is it like decades or 50 years or what?
It was the old ownership of the Village Pub, when the Village Pub used to come off
of Woodside. So probably early 90s, 30 years.
Okay. Yes, Brian.
Does the town have historic resources that show the original right-of-way, or at least how it changed over time? I'd love to see like early plat maps that show where the parcels were. It might inform our narrative with Caltrans to document what it was in 1920, 1950, 1970, 1990, just to see, because there are communities where highways run right through them that have a traditional main street, you know, and are quite narrow. It would be interesting.
That's where I was going with that, is Steve, maybe we can learn from the past.
We're just pointing out that it was 1972 when Caltrans widened that road. At the same time, you know, they got rid of the gas station in the middle of the road, and below that, in front of what's now Gilbert Center, there used to be Lowe Road, named after Bill Lowe, our first mayor. And then the area, when that got eliminated, basically, and turned into that free right turn lane that's really dangerous for bicyclists, that the island in the middle was named after the town's road commissioner for many years. We have Alec Donald Park, that's called. But so I think we've forgotten about our founders who were memorialized but have disappeared.
Thank you, so Richard. Yes.
South side of Woodside Road, I don't think, given chain of title, which for us goes back to the 1920s, I don't think the right-of-way has changed. That north property line fronting Woodside Road has always been in that location. Whether it was fully paved or not, I think Steve is highlighting that that may have changed substantially in 72 where they came in. So,
great. Matt, yes.
One is a direct answer on the question of sort of historical plat maps and whatnot. I think it's 1949 imagery is on Google Earth. First, you can kind of pop that up historically, and there's like periodic good ones, but that's kind of a fun one. You can also see, fun fact, how much more fire danger there is now, given that back when fire used to rip through here with some frequency, it was a lot of grassland, and we have a lot more vegetation, but that's a bit of an aside. I had another point. Lost it. But that was, yeah, it's the...
We'll do some research on that.
Oh, I'm sorry, if I can. Yeah, I wanted to respond on this sort of scope creep and, you know, going beyond town center. I think we don't often have this type of group assembled that is sort of actively seeking community engagement. And I would encourage us to, like, while it may be outside the scope of the current contract and initiative, like, let's set the agenda for the future, right? So if that's, we want to do like a comprehensive look at circulation. I know when I was on circulation, it was very ad hoc. It was kind of like what people raised, but like looking at that holistically, I think would be great. And then also just like utilization of other, you know, quasi-public or town-owned sites. Like, again, you know, we were talking about junior riders and why is that 2 months out of the year? But like, are there other things we want to recommend for future agenda? I think it would be sort of sad to miss that opportunity to put that on some form of public record to set an agenda.
Great. I think we could suggest that could be part of a report once this process has been concluded, as the CAC has suggestions for future planning initiatives that could be considered. We want to also hear, speaking of community engagement, from the public, if there's any members of the public who would like to speak, either here in person or online, we'll take an opportunity for that. And then if we have time after that, we could do another round if people have further comments, but want to provide that opportunity.
Thalia Lubin again, by way of some history. Steve touched on this, that when, and this may tie in with Caltrans, when the 280 deal was going on and everybody was coming down Kenyatta Road and out Woodside Road to get back on 280, the state just came through and just blasted. And that the reason for that happening is gone now, because 280 goes all the way through. So perhaps we could make an argument that maybe it's time to go back to narrowing the road. And the triangle, as Steve said, was a lot. It went further to the north, and it had the gas station in the middle. And it's now Alec Donald Park after the first road commissioner. And I remember at the time talking to our former town manager, Susan George, about making that into a park. And she said, no, because it's too dangerous to cross the road from Roberts, and people are going to go there and get hurt. And so it was built with craggy rocks all the way around. But people still go there and sit, and I see them eating their sandwiches. So maybe we really do need to look at that and talk to Caltrans about that. In terms of the amphitheater, when Steve and I worked on the museum, there was a plan. Gene Dickey, former mayor, councilperson, and Steve worked on it. I don't know if there's still a copy of that in town hall, but there was a lot of conversation about amphitheater next to the museum, that being a town center, having events like First Friday. I think we should go back and look at that again, revisit it. And with a lot of native planting, by the way, because Gene was really big on native plants. The church, I think, should be looked at as a
community center. I started yoga with Carly's mom in room 9, then we moved to Guildhall, then we moved here. The nursery school has now left the church. I know the church is suffering financially. Maybe we can look at some adaptive reuse with the classrooms. Just, again, outside the box ideas.
Hi, I'm Karen Van Putten, principal of Woodside High School. This is my first ever Woodside Council meeting that I'm attending, and I think I landed on a most interesting one. I didn't know what you were discussing. I really came because a community member sent me a concern, and I believe the council may have received, quick hands, may have received a copy. So first I want to address why I came. Thank you. Here we go. 5'1". So this letter was sent to me as well as the St. Francis High School administration. The subject was urgent concern, student safety, and reckless e-bike moped behavior. I get a letter from the community, sometimes a form letter and a photocopy of the dangers of e-bike transportation. Since you're all talking about transportation and safety, it's somewhat in the same vein. But I really wanted to just address this community member who will, I'm not going to name the concern member, because he named 4 young people's names and assumed that they were all Woodside High School students or affiliated with Woodside High School. They're not. But basically, I really wanted to respond to the community member, writing out of deep concern for the safety of both students and the broader community. In recent weeks, several students from your schools, have been repeatedly observed engaging in reckless and dangerous behavior while riding high-powered e-bikes and mopeds on local streets. The behavior had included riding without headlights at night, sometimes around 8:30 p.m., making them nearly invisible to drivers. They're running stop signs, nearly causing serious collisions, performing stunts, wheelies, maneuvers in traffic lanes, riding in groups, and intentionally blocking cars or confronting drivers head-on, kicking up dust clouds along entire routes, disturbing visibility and creating unsafe conditions for minutes afterward. And that is concerning. And while I cannot own these particular individuals as my own students, I do take responsibility as the principal of your local high school here in Woodside. Whether they were my kids or not, it is a concern. I certainly want, I don't want our teenagers representing all teenagers in this way. In fact, just moments before I came to this meeting, 2 other students who were not my students were on my campus on their e-bikes. And as I confronted them very respectfully, they rode off. I now have them on surveillance. But basically, I'm here tonight because I want to partner with you. And I want to make sure that our Woodside community members also feel like the principal has responded. I don't know what we really can do. You know, the member was urgently saying, speak to the parents, notify them, you know, et cetera. I will do whatever I can to partner with you and the Woodside community. I will contact the sheriff's department. But I wanted to just make sure that you knew that these are not Woodside High School students, because we do really try to invoke in them being community members and that they should really represent. So with that, I also want to just speak to what I listened to earlier. I would love to partner with you in all of your planning of a future town center. I think, as you mentioned numerous times tonight about the school, you have 2 schools. 2 public schools, and that includes Woodside High School that serves 1,700 students, and really partner with the high school students because they're creative. We can make the signs. We have a graphic design program. We have amazing artists. We have a lot of creative thinkers. We have entertainers who can fill the amphitheater or some village hall with the 199 record students. So while I came with a concern, I'm leaving you with an invitation to partner with Woodside High School.
So we do have some folks online if we want to alternate. Kristen New, if you'd like to unmute yourself.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. Hi, good evening. My name is Kristen New. I was born and raised in Woodside, and I live up in District 5, up by Alice's Restaurant. A couple comments. So I'm just going to try to be very brief, so pardon the lack of transitions between thoughts. For parking and traffic, might I suggest a 90-minute limit in town hall lots? So I've come and had pretty much every parking spot adjacent to Independence Hall filled by cyclists. So there's bike racks in the backs of people's cars. And I've watched big groups of up to 40 people come back from their rides and then get into their cars and then drive away. And then suddenly 30% of the spots open up. So whether they're coming from other areas of the town, unlikely, or from nearby communities, Menlo Park, Palo Alto, make it a time limit so that people don't fill up the lot and go for that 3-hour jaunt or carpool to somewhere else. Or we can also have resident permits. Other towns and cities do that as well. Private property can utilize paid parking systems. I think this was mentioned. You're already trying to enforce not parking, so you may as well monetize your space by having people pay and enforce that instead. The Mountain Terrace on Skyline across from Alice has recently implemented such a measure. What about parking shuttles? So utilizing, I don't know, electric bicycle rickshaws or electric golf carts during peak hours, like weekend lunchtime, that might also relieve some of the pressure of parking in that downtown area. Consider a roundabout versus a stop sign at Kenyatta and Woodside. Roundabouts demonstrate a significant safety and efficiency advantages over intersections with stop signs, and that may be something that could be looked into because that's safer for vehicles, for pedestrians, it slows traffic. There's notably in that same intersection, there's no safe crossing from Roberts to Gilbert Center Trail. It is extremely dicey trying to cross there. I've tried to hold my son's hand and cross, and it's just a very chaotic sort of area back there as well. And to the note of the school principal, I think it would be great if there can be some connection for teens. We want kids and teens to get off screens and be out in their community. So why not shape the community as one that they can be in, whether that's connecting with transit to, you know, Woodside High School to town center, or just creating spaces for teens as well. And speaking of community spaces, you know, I know this, several people commented on this. Portola Valley has town center with centralized resources in a place that is safe for those with mobility issues and of all ages, for little kids as well. And frankly, with Woodside navigating a busy state highway that bisects the town, it feels too risky oftentimes. And I personally often choose to go to Portola Valley over Woodside because of those safety concerns. Thank you very much to everyone for the work that they're doing on this. Good.
If anyone else online would like to speak, please raise your hand. And we have another one, Lexi. You can go ahead and unmute.
Okay, thank you. Lexi Bartlow. I'm just circling back to the ideas about raising funds. As a former president of the Woodside Community Foundation, I would strongly encourage you to contact the current president, Marcia Bondurant, to explore fundraising for your specific projects. As far as public funding goes, this is an excellent way to like incentivize private tax deductible donations. And so I think this seems like it's going to make some good progress. I've been on a lot of I've lived here a long time. And by the way, I didn't die. And here, so, and yes, I was involved with Measure J. So anyway, thank you for all your work. I appreciate it.
There are no other raised hands online at the moment.
Paul Gold, Cinnabar Road. There we go. Strange being on the sun. I had a whole bunch of prepared remarks on Measure J, I spent 2 hours before this meeting researching it. It's not fun. And I'm not going to even discuss it at all because this meeting has been pretty amazing, I think. I'm really impressed. I wanted to mention a few things, but nothing specific about any of these issues that I was planning on. The level of expertise and experience, and most importantly, engagement on this group is astounding. And I'm just really blown away by the ideas. I wasn't quite expecting this. By the way, when I was researching Measure J, certain names come up. And I mean, you know, you go back in these documents and you see some very familiar names, including Lexi's was on there too. But some of the comments that were made here, and I sort of sense that you want to stretch a little bit. And part of the reason that I see that is it's hard to just go up to the little store and not think the elementary school is pretty important. The church is pretty important. It's pretty important what's going on in the 280 and the beautification. So the only thing I would suggest, and I'm suggesting this as a private citizen, I don't think I'm allowed to do it any other way, but is I would encourage you that you know, Matt said something, you said a few things that were important, but you said one thing that was particularly was really meaningful to me. The housing element was a mess. And there were a lot of self-imposed limitations on it, including Measure J, which was used kind of as a cudgel, was used as a weapon not to do certain things. And the reason I bring this up is because housing is obviously a big and important part of this. The commercial, this place could, we haven't changed this plan in 37 years or something. I mean, it's essentially the same way it was before. And this group is so engaged and I think so in good. I'm not saying that. This is a very impressive team that's here. Whoever put this together should really be congratulated. But the point that I really wanted to make was don't let these impediments stop you. Measure J stopped the housing element in certain places that were obvious. Don't let Caltrans be the impediment. Don't let the school, don't let the limits we put on it. I know that the consultants are probably screaming inside right about now, but I say go for it. You've got some great ideas here. If you could get 10% of them done, this would be a tremendous win for the community. And so I really want you to don't let these impediments stand in your way. Don't impose them. Don't think Measure J is going to stop you. Don't think Caltrans can't be dealt with. Don't. You now have elected officials in your town who are really close to the elected officials in Sacramento and Washington, D.C. It's a strange thing. I've seen it on both sides. I can tell you that the town council back 25 years ago, we never even got the time of day from any of those folks. Today, we're having dinner with them. I mean, it's just, they're really engaged and close. I'm not sure the money is there, but I think you let the town figure it out. But so I would just encourage you to, you know, keep all these ideas alive. Go for it. Don't impose limitations on yourself. That is the kiss of death. I say go for it. Turn it over to the town. You've got a lot of things that you can do here. And it's up to us to make sure that it gets implemented. By us, I mean the community, not just the town. And so I'm really thankful that you're here and I'm very impressed with the stuff and just wanted to thank you for your engagement.
I know I'm double dipping here, but I just want to follow up on what Sue said and also Alexis. The museum we did through the Community Foundation, we raised $800,000. The planting was done privately. There is no need to say that there are a lot of resources in Woodside. And I think if, as Paul just said, don't let money, you know, if there's some specific project, I'm sure you can find people to fund it. And the Community Foundation is the umbrella organization for tax deductible gifts. So I echo what Paul said.
Good evening, everyone. Excuse me. David Middleman speaking as a private citizen tonight specifically. I agree with what you said, Julie. We have to think about this holistically. Town center is center. And I also agree with what Paul Gould said. This is a blue sky exercise. The town area plan, the general plan is aspirational, right? There's something in there about solving the parking problem in Skyline that hasn't been solved yet. That was written 30 years ago, but it's there. I do believe I was at the town council meeting when they talked about the area for this TCAP, and they stopped debate because they just kept going. I believe the comment was, if the committee wants to expand, we'll take it up. With regards to design standards, we can capture what is Woodside in design standards. Other towns have done it. If anybody's been to Solvang, Solvang still looks like a Dutch town because that's what their design standards say. We haven't done that as a town. It doesn't mean we can't, which is also how we can address housing in the town center. If you want to put two units of housing on your property, you either got to do it as an ADU and a single family home, or you have to do an SB9 project, which means you have to tear your house down and you can only build units of 800 square feet, no more. We don't have any way to build a duplex in this town. And if you want something that's more rural than multifamily housing, that's a duplex. This town is small, but it's also big. I live out by Alice's, by Skylanda. We have one bus that goes to the other public. This town is served by more than two public schools. We're also served by Patola Valley. I believe part of it is Kings Mountain as well. And I think it might be Redwood City Schools as well. Yep, that was the one we couldn't think of. My kid gets on a bus in the morning. There's no afternoon bus. If I want him to go to Bucks for a milkshake after school, I'd have to go pick him up and drop him off. And I believe the only way District 5 students can get to Woodside High School right now is by car, which means that parents have to drive them down and pick them up. And Woodside High School is not an easy place to get from and to downtown. I would love my kids to go to Woodside Town Center, since I'm a Woodside resident, than to be in Portola Valley Town Center, where there's not really that many food options. The library, a field, we also have a library. We have some really cool restaurants. It would be a nice place for them to get to. And then to get back up the hill. Yeah, I think that was all my comments. That same bus system can also solve some of the bike problems. People park in Town Center, go up Kings Mountain, come down 84, hopefully not crash, all while being parked in Town Center. If there was a bus where they can put their bike on, go up the hill, ride down, it might alleviate some of the traffic problems. So, but please think of this as a blue sky exercise. We'll figure out how to do it later. Thank you.
If anyone else online would like to speak, please use the raise hand feature. No raised hands.
Well, thank you, everybody, members of the public and CAC members. I'm truly excited. I'm sure I'm speaking for our team, and I think you all are too. That's what I'm hearing, and really pleased. We promised to get you out by 9, so we will get you out by 9. Troy has a couple of follow-up slides or direction on future engagement activities, so we want you to be engaged, not just in the CAC meetings, but should you want to, please join us for these other community engagement activities and tell your friends.
Thank you, everyone. I echo everyone else's comments. This was a super, really great start to this process. We look forward to really hearing your ideas, working through some of these challenges, and coming up with a really great product here. As I mentioned before, our survey is live now, so please do take that or share that. We'd love to hear from lots of people. There are some free response opportunities, so you can write in your ideas. Obviously, we'll be summarizing everything we've heard here, and we'll be sharing out this as a kind of a summary of what we've heard tonight. We've got two pop-ups coming up later in September, and then the first workshop in early October, October 9th, at the elementary school, of all places. So we'll have another chance to share with this group and with other members of the community. So again, great to have you here. Looking forward to a really robust dialogue with the folks here. So thanks so much.
And I just want to add, thank you all very much. Anything comes up, any questions, please feel free to reach out to Julie or myself. If you have any ideas you'd like us to distribute, please do it. This is a great start to the process. Thank you.
Thanks.